Good morning. My name's Judy. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, y'all. I want to thank Karen and Corey for inviting me up here this morning. I think it's just quite amazing that there are this many people here at 8 o'clock on Saturday morning. I think it's willing to go to any length to be sober, because some of the people that I told that I was going to be here this morning said, all of them said about the same thing, 8 o'clock? Saturday morning? I said, yeah, well, I'd like to, but that's all right, don't worry about it. So, my sobriety date is August the 2nd, 1993, which means I've got 23 years right now, so, yeah. One day at a time. I believe, or I think, that when I got here on this planet, this earth time space deal thing that I found myself in, I think I came here feeling inadequate, feeling like something was wrong, but I didn't know what it was. And I always felt like I didn't quite fit in. And I felt guilty about something, but I didn't know exactly what it was. And I felt ashamed. I felt ashamed. And I think maybe that was because my mother, when I do something wrong, my mother used to say, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. You should be ashamed of yourself. And so, but she didn't tell me how long that shame ought to last, so it probably lingered with me longer than it should have. I didn't make friends very easily for whatever reason. I thought nobody liked me. I was shy and standoffish and lacked self-confidence, so the teachers said on my report cards. And later they said I was aloof, sarcastic, and didn't try hard enough. They said that I should be more like my sister. Why can't you be more like your sister? Because she was friendly and outgoing, made good grades, and goody-two-shoes. Well, I didn't know how to do that. It wasn't in me. I mean, that was her. It wasn't me. I didn't know how to do that. I spent a lot of time in the guidance counselor's office because I didn't know how to behave. I felt confused, unwanted, unloved, misunderstood, and scared. Can y'all relate? I felt like I was good enough, not good enough. And then one day when I was a teenager, my savior showed up in the form of alcohol. I don't remember my first drink. I don't remember who gave it to me or what it was or when it was or where it was. I just don't remember. But I do remember that on weekends, I would go out with my friends and we'd get somebody to buy us beer. And we'd go sit out by the lake and drink beer and listen to the radio and do things that teenagers do. And it made me feel finally like I fit in, that I belonged, that everything was okay, that I was peaceful and at ease. But drinking, you know, I hear some people say that when they started drinking that they immediately knew they were alcoholic because they, you know, started drinking all the time and got in all kinds of trouble and everything. My alcoholism was very slow and progressing. And so I didn't get in a lot of trouble. I didn't get in any trouble. Excuse me. But just drinking on the weekends with my friends. And then I met a man when I was 18, 19 years old. And we got married. And he was a drinker. And same thing. We drank on the weekends. And we had a lot of fun. And when we'd been married about 5 years, we had a beautiful baby girl named Tracy. And she was and still is the light of our lives. We were married for 11 years. Drinking slowly progressed, but still not to the point where I got in any kind of trouble. Things happened and we got divorced. And Tracy and I moved into an apartment, and my drinking increased because I was free. And I could do whatever I wanted to do, and I didn't have to answer to anybody. And so I started drinking more, but still not to the point where it caused any problems. I didn't think. But what was beginning to happen was I was starting to neglect my life. I was getting to that point where it says in the big book, I couldn't tell the truth from the false. I thought drinking, I was having fun. So why not, you know? But what I was doing, I was not neglecting my life, I was neglecting Tracy's life. Not that I'd left her in a hot car or left her at home alone or anything like that, but I would take her to my mother's or to her aunt's or other grandmother's or somebody, you know, just so I could have fun drinking with my friends. I wasn't hurting anybody, right? That's what I thought. I wasn't hurting anybody. But I was hurting myself and I was hurting her and I was hurting other people. Then after a little while, a couple years or so, my knight in shining armor showed up. And he was tall, dark, and handsome. He was funny. He was everything that a girl could want. And he liked to drink, too. And so we drank a lot. But he lived in Birmingham, Alabama, and at the time I lived in Knoxville, Tennessee. And so we had this long-distance relationship going on, and we thought we were in love. And so after about 3 months, he asked me to marry him, and I said, of course, yes, I would. So we got married, and he moved to Nashville, and he said, marry me and bring Tracy and come to Nashville. So I did. I had a really good job. I left that. I left all my stuff and went off to Nashville to live happily ever after. But as life would have it, it didn't turn out that way. We drank. I was drinking more and more and more and more. And one night we got into a really big argument. I couldn't do it anymore. And so I packed up Tracy and took her to my mother and daddy's house because I didn't know what to do. Alcohol would not allow me to make good decisions. So I thought that was the best thing for me to do would be to take her up there to stay with them while I tried to get my life straightened out. I didn't mean to leave her there for long, but days turned into weeks, and I went back to Ralph, my husband, and we were going to try to work it out, and then Tracy was there, and days and then weeks and then months, and she started school up there, and then her dad got married and wanted her to come and live with him. So, and I thought that was the best decision for her to go live with her dad, because I was still, you know, crazy, and I had a job where I was traveling some, so I thought that was a good idea. So she went to live with her dad. I was married to Ralph for another couple of years, and we got divorced. And I moved into an apartment where my drinking escalated once again. I was drinking pretty much all the time, but I still didn't get in any trouble. And I actually, living in Nashville at that time was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun drinking with friends of mine. The company that I worked for asked me if I wanted to transfer to Atlanta, and I didn't know anybody in Atlanta, and I said, yeah, I'll go. So I came down here. And it occurred to me that maybe I was drinking too much. Getting drunk every day, maybe I was drinking just a little bit too much. So I decided that this move, the geographical cure, would help me. When I get to Marietta, to Atlanta area, I'll stop drinking. Things will be different because nobody will know me there. They won't know what I'm like, and I can be different. I can just be different. But it didn't work. As a matter of fact, when I got here, I called up here to Howe Place, and I said, I think I have a problem with drinking. And I said, what do y'all do up there at Howe Place? Because Howe Place was the only thing in the phone book under AA for some reason, back then, way back then. And the guy said, we're just a bunch of drunks up here trying to stay sober. And I thought, of course, I imagined what people in trench coats and bottles, you know, well, I don't want to drink, oh, please, you know. So I said, I don't think so. So I didn't come up here. when I got to Marietta, I didn't know that you couldn't buy beer on Sundays. So when I got here, I drank up everything. And in Nashville, you could buy beer at 12 o'clock on Sunday. So I thought that was the same thing here. So I waited till noon, and I went up to the convenience store on the corner. I got some beer, probably a bunch of beer, and put it on the counter. And I said, "We don't sell beer on Sunday." And I said, "What?" And he said, "We don't sell beer on Sunday." I said, "What do you mean you don't sell beer on Sunday? There's no signs up." And he said, "We don't sell beer on Sunday." And I said, "Well, that didn't make any sense." And he said, "Well, you can go over here and sit in this little pub over here, it's Winston's. You can go sit over there and drink beer all day, but you can't buy it and take it home." I thought that was just the stupidest thing. So I went home, and I thought, well, what am I going to do now? You know, how am I going to get through this day? It's not that I was really, you know, having going into DTs or anything like that. I just wanted to drink. And so I went over to Winston's and got something to eat and drank several beers, you know, enough just to calm, just to take the edge off. And while I was there, I noticed that they had a bar that was, it was rectangle, and there was people sitting up there, and they looked like they were having a pretty good time. I wasn't a bar drinker yet. And so I went home, and I thought, well, you know, that might be a good place to hang out and meet people. So I went back and sat at the bar and started talking to people. You know how it is sitting at bars. You talk to people, and you have fun, right? And and then one day, this new bartender showed up, and he was just the cutest thing I had ever seen. And we started dating, and then we started living together, and we drank a lot of alcohol, and we smoked a lot of pot. And we had a lot of fun for a long time. And then one day we didn't. Tracy, things happened with Tracy and her dad, and she got herself in a little bit of trouble, and so she came to live with us, which was fine with me, but he wasn't happy about it. The fun turned into not so much fun, and we got into the point of just the continuous arguing and tension, and I just wanted him to be different because it was all his fault. And if he was different, then I'd be okay. And so I'd ask God, please make him different. I don't care what you do to make him different. Just make him different. And so one day he came home and he said, "I have to stop drinking. I'm going to stop drinking and go to AA. And I said, "Yeah, right." Because he had tried that before, you know, drinking the O'Doul's and stuff and trying to stop drinking, but he never did. And I thought this would be no different. And so I came home one day, and he wasn't there. And when he got back, I said, "Where have you been?" And he said he had gone to Bronner's, which is not there anymore. I think it's something else now. He had gone down there, and they had wanted to keep him. But he said no, he wanted to be an outpatient. And so he was an outpatient, and he stopped drinking. It wasn't easy for him. He had a lot of rough days, but he stopped drinking, started going to AA, and I was just astounded. It was just like, but then he would come home and try to fix me. I said, "I don't want no part of it. I'm not the one with the problem. You are." Alcoholism. I was drinking every day and going to bed drunk every night, but my alcoholism said, "You don't have a problem, it's him." So he was constantly on my ass, you know, you're an alcoholic, you drink too much, you need to go to a meeting. You need to come to go to a meeting with me. "No, I don't." "Yes, you do. You need to do that." So it was just the whole time. So finally I said, okay, I'll go. So I went with him on Sunday morning, because I knew if I didn't go early in the morning, I'd start drinking. So I went with him on Sunday morning. I didn't hear anything. I didn't see anything. It was like I was, like y'all were out there in the light, and I was back here in the dark, and you couldn't see me. The only thing I remember hearing was somebody said, don't drink and go to meetings. And I thought, what does that mean? Don't drink before you go to a meeting? I didn't get it. I really didn't get it. Don't drink and go to meetings. So I didn't get it. And so I came home and started drinking. I didn't go because I wanted to go. I went because he wanted me to, and that will never work. I had to go because I wanted to. And so he'd go to a meeting, he'd come home and say, they told me to tell you. They told me to tell you we got to get all the alcohol out of the house. And I said, what? Why? And he said, well, if we don't get all the alcohol out of the house, I might want to start drinking it. I thought, man, you know, selfishness, self-centeredness a little bit. So I said, well, what do you want me to do with it? And he said, let's take it and put it in the trunk of your car. Okay. So we got a cooler, put the beer and stuff in it, and put it in the trunk of the car. And so now every time I want a drink, I have to go out to the trunk. I said, and you know, after a little while, I don't know, a day or two, I said, this is not going to work. This is my house, my refrigerator, my alcohol. It's coming back in. Selfish, self-centered, inconsiderate. So I did, and he didn't drink. I don't know how the man stayed sober. He came in one day and he said, they told me to tell you, read the chapter to the wives. And he gave me this big book. And I said, okay. And he said, he'd come home and he'd say, did you read it? Did you read it yet? No, I didn't read it. Are you going to read it? Yeah, I'll read it. When are you going to read it? I'll read it. It's pretty soon. The next day, did you read it? No, I didn't read it. Are you going to do another good look? Did this one on. So finally I said, okay, I'll read it. I really meant it. So I'll read it. So I started reading it, and I didn't see what they wanted me to see. What I saw was the alcoholic only seems to be unloving and inconsiderate. It is usually because he is warped and sickened that he does and says these appalling things. Try not to condemn your alcoholic husband, no matter what he says or does. He is just another very sick and unreasonable person. Treat him, when you can, as though he had pneumonia. When he angers you, remember he is very ill. And I said, no. Closed-minded, selfish, inconsiderate. So he came home and he said, did you read it? Yeah, I read it. And I told him what he could do with it. So I came home and he said, they told me to tell you, one of three things is going to happen. He said, you're going to stop drinking, I'm going to start, or I'm going to leave here. Well, that was my out right there, right? I said, I'll see you. I should have said, I'll see you, I'll help you pack and all that, but I didn't. I said, there's one more thing. There's one more option you have. And he said, what's that? And I said, you can leave me alone. Just leave me alone. I don't want to hear any more about AA. I don't want to hear that I'm an alcoholic. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear it. Just leave me alone. And he said, okay. And he did. And he left me alone. And when he left me alone is when I started listening. It's attraction rather than promotion. So I started watching him, and he was getting sober. You know, he was starting to talk about a God of his own understanding. And I was intrigued. I was interested. And so he would come home and tell me some things that were going on in the meetings, which I thought, you know, it sounded pretty good, you know. But and then I started to realize how much I really was drinking, because he wasn't drinking. I could tell how much I was drinking, because I used to put a small bottle of wine in the refrigerator and have the big bottle of wine in the bedroom so I could fill up that little bottle in the refrigerator so he wouldn't know how much I was drinking. Brilliant, right? And stuff like that. So you know, a six pack of beer didn't get it. You know, I'd want more. I have to have more to get that to that level where I felt normal. You know, I couldn't tell the truth from the false. And so I went to a sales conference of the company I worked for, sales conference, where they didn't care what you drank. They encouraged it because they had cocktail parties. They had wine with dinner. They had open bar after dinner. So heaven, right? So I thought, well, I'm not going to drink as much this time at this conference. I'll just have enough to get a buzz and then I'll quit. It didn't work because I didn't know when I got the buzz. You know, which drink gave me the buzz? I didn't know. So of course I got drunk. So I decided though that when I came home, I was going to stop drinking. I was going to go to AA. So I got home on a Thursday. I thought, well, nobody quits drinking on a Thursday or Friday. Alcoholism. And so I drank everything in the house, and Monday came. And I said, I remember I was kind of in today's the day. One day at a time, today's the day. And so I remember standing in my living room, and I was, you know, like, okay, God, I can't do this by myself. You got to help me. And I saw something the other day, a quote from Joel Osteen, that said, when you humble yourself and say, God, I can't do this on my own. I need your help. You're showing your dependency on Him. When you acknowledge God like that, He'll help you accomplish what you couldn't accomplish on your own. I thought, well, you know, that's what happened to me. Because I knew there had to be a better way to live. I just didn't know how to do it. I was afraid to do it. So I asked Him to help me that day sincerely. I used to ask Him to help me not drink, but I didn't mean it because I wanted to drink because I didn't know any other way to live. And so He helped me that day. I usually started drinking about 10 o'clock in the morning. And I went up to the Kroger store up on the corner and just to buy some groceries and stuff. And I went by the beer and wine. I didn't buy any. And I got up to the checkout. And my alcoholism said, you know, some wine would be good about right now. And I said, yeah, it would. He said, your mother just passed away. And everybody would understand if you drank because you're grieving. And I said, you're right. I'm having this conversation in my head. And so I told the guy, I'll be right back. I'll be right back. So I started back through the store, and something stopped me in my tracks. It just, boom, stopped. And it said you wouldn't drink today. And I said, damn. Okay. So I went home. I didn't buy any alcohol, and I went home, and I didn't drink that day. I don't remember anything about the next 3 days, other than I just know I didn't drink. That's a miracle right there. And then I knew that if I didn't go to AA, if I didn't go on and go to AA, that I wouldn't be able to stay stopped. So on the, I think it was a Wednesday night, I said to myself, if I wake up, I'd already looked at the schedule and I saw that there was a meeting at 8111 at 7 or 7:30 in the morning. And I said, if I wake up in the morning at 5:30 without the aid of an alarm, I'll go. Right? So the next morning, my eyes popped open, I looked at the clock and it was 5:28. And I said, oh man. And my alcoholism said, you don't want to do this. It's a long way over there. It's dark out. Go back to sleep. And I said, okay. And something else in my head said, You said if you woke up, you would go. I said, damn. So I went over to 8111, and they somehow knew I was new. They talked about the first step, I guess. I don't know what to talk about. But when it came for them to give out chips, the woman said, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And I thought she said, the only requirement is to stop drinking. And I said, I don't know if I can do that. And she said, the only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. I said, okay. Okay. So I picked up a white chip, and something shifted in my mind to where I didn't want to drink. And that's God doing for me what I could not do for myself. I am a miraculous demonstration of the power of God working through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't get sober by myself, and he couldn't get me sober by himself, so we had to work together. We still have to work together. We have to cooperate. When I got here, I already had a thing, I already had a God thing going on, and I thought I was oh so spiritual because I went to church and I went to a lot of seminars and workshops and listened to tapes and blah, blah, and all that stuff. And so I thought I had this thing going on with God. What I didn't know was that I had this problem called alcoholism, and I didn't know that God was a power greater than myself that could restore me to enough sanity not to drink alcohol one day at a time. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's the way it was. And so when I started relying on God to help me with the way I think, and he did that through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I started going to meetings every day. I went to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I couldn't hear and I couldn't see, but I kept coming back. And I didn't know that in a meeting it was okay to pass when they called on you. And so I would sit there and think about what am I going to say when it comes to my turn. So I wasn't listening to anybody. I was thinking about what I was going to say when it came my turn. And I'd look around and I'd say, well, let's see, it's 15 till and there's five people in front of me, and if they talk 3 minutes each, then I won't have to talk. You know, and then this was the stuff that was going on in my head. I wasn't listening to anything that was going on. Alcoholism was real strong in my mind, and it just wouldn't allow me to see or hear. So I got to where I would close my eyes, and I still do, when they read how it works, because I wanted to hear what they were saying. And if I didn't close my eyes, I would be looking around going, I wonder if she looked in the mirror before she left home. I'd be going, well, what's he doing with her? You know, and stuff. And judging and, you know, not listening to what I ought to be listening to. So I close my eyes and I listen to what's being said. And when I first came in here, I thought that y'all had to be doing something. I thought you had to be drinking or smoking or taking something or something. Because I didn't see anybody could live life straight up and head on without some aid, you know, because when I wasn't drinking or doing something, I didn't feel right. And then I found out y'all weren't doing anything. And then I used to hear people say, I got a DUI. I got 17 DUIs. And I thought, I never got any DUI. I never got in trouble. And then I hear they've been in jail a bunch of times for drinking. I thought, I knew I was never in jail. I was never arrested. I don't know. I drove drunk all the time, and I never got stopped, and I never got arrested. Never been in jail. And I'd hear them say, they used to drink a quart of vodka a day. And I thought, I didn't even drink vodka. Maybe I'm not an alcoholic after all. Alcoholism, still in my mind, wouldn't allow me to see what was going on. And I was in a Joe and Charlie Big Book study one time, and early on, and my friend Denise, I told her, I said, right after how, you know, they were talking about the real alcoholic, I said, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. And she said,
why don't you go try some controlled drinking? And I said, And I got to thinking about it, that I couldn't control my drinking. Once I started, I couldn't control it. And then, you know, I started to listen to people when they said that kind of thing, you know, like they never knew how much they were going to drink when they started. And I thought, that's the way I was. And that once they started thinking about drinking, they couldn't stop thinking about drinking. Well, that's the way I was. Because when I was a practicing alcoholic, I'd think, what am I going to drink? When am I going to drink it? How am I going to have enough for Sunday? You know, that was back when you couldn't buy beer on Sunday. Two cases of beer, a bottle of Jack, and a bottle of wine, just in case. So I went to a lot of meetings and I listened to, you know, they told me, you got to get a sponsor, you need to get a sponsor, you have to get a sponsor. I thought, well, I'm not going to just say, will you be my sponsor? So I listened, and there was this one woman that went to, she seemed to be at every meeting that I was at, and I could hear her. I could hear what she was saying. And so I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said she would. She had 7 years sobriety. And so I'd bitch and moan, carry on about what he was doing and why was he doing it, and it was all his fault and all that stuff. And she'd say, just let it go. Don't argue with him. What? I think I need a new sponsor. I don't know. I complain about life and worry about what was going to happen, and she'd say, let go and let God. Trust God. And I'd say, trust him to do something or trust him to not do something? I don't understand. And she'd say, just go to me. Just go to me. So I'd go to me. And she took me up to a meeting in Kennesaw, run by a guy named Railroad Bob. I don't know if y'all remember him. He did a big book study, and I went there for many, many years, and he explained the big book in a way that I could understand. And I still go to a lot of big book studies. I go to a lot of step studies because I believe, they told me, and I believe that the solution to this thing called alcoholism is in the big book. Whatever the problem is, I will find the answer there. I also went to a program called Navalco, which is it's for new or novice alcoholics. That's where the Navalco comes from. And it helped me to get into the steps because trying to go through the steps, when I got to step four in a big book, I wrote in my book, you know, it says, for next we launched out onto a course of vigorous action. And I said, I put in my big book, stop, wait. Are you sure you believe what you say you believe? Maybe you ought to go back and take another look. Because I didn't want to do the fourth step because it said, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And that scared me, that moral part, because I thought I had to tell somebody every dirty, rotten, filthy thing I'd ever done, and I didn't want to do that. But in Navalco, they said it's time to do the fourth step, so I did it, and I found out that I was simply looking for my character defects. Bottom line, what's my part in all this, and what character defect was driving me? Pour alcohol on it, and it drove me. I began to realize that alcohol was not the problem because I really believed that when I stopped drinking that everything was going to be okay, that everything would automatically straighten out, and it didn't. And I thought, but then when I went through the steps, I realized that it's got to do with my thinking more than it's got to do with my drinking. Of course, when I start drinking, I stop thinking, or my thinking gets all confused and muddled, and I don't make good decisions. My life eventually, it took a while for my life to start straightening out. But today, my life is good. Life is good today. I used to wake up and wonder, you know, what's going to go wrong today? something's going to go wrong. It's going to be terrible. Yesterday was awful. Today's going to be worse. And tomorrow's going to be even worse than that. But today when I wake up, I turn my thoughts to God and I thank Him for just the day and for the opportunity to be here. And I pray that He direct my thinking, that it be divorced of selfishness, self-pity, and self-seeking motives. All through the day, when I get restless, irritable, and discontent, sometimes I remember to say the Serenity Prayer. Sometimes I don't. And I just get all caught up in the insanity of the day. I was in an 11-step meeting a couple weeks ago that my daughter Tracy has right here at Howe Place, right back there in that room on Sunday night at 7 o'clock. And the topic was, I am no longer running the show, thy will be done. And I thought, wow. I mean, I've been in this program for 23 years. And it's like I never heard that before. So I've started giving it a lot of thought during the day when things don't go like I think they ought to. And that happens frequently. I'm still learning to step back and realize that I used to think that I wouldn't act like I act if you hadn't done what you did. It was all your fault, you know? And now I realize that maybe probably you wouldn't act like you act if I hadn't acted like I acted. So I got to realize that it's what I see starts with me. You know, you're a reflection of me. And so I'm learning to step back, say the Serenity Prayer, say, I am no longer running the show. Thy will be done. You take it. You handle it. I don't know how. And He does a good job when I do that. Because I can really find peace and serenity. Sometimes it takes a minute, but it will come. It always comes. The slogans that seemed so trite and trivial when I first came in, you know, the one day at a time, but it's oh so true. And you know that when, just let it be now. Let it be today. Everything will be all right. This too shall pass. Let go and let God. Faith without works is dead. And I believe that because I believe that going through the steps, learning how to be sober, if I stop there, if I go through the steps and say, phew, done it, I'm okay. If I don't keep coming back, if I don't carry the message, then my alcoholism that's still waiting on me is going to pop back up, and when I get into that restless, irritable, and discontent, and I forget to say the Serenity Prayer, and I forget to talk to God about it, and then I get my mind in a real fix that it's an opportunity for my alcoholism to pop up and say, I can help you. I can help you feel better. And so I've got to stay in the middle of this thing. I still go to a lot of meetings, and I still sponsor a lot of people. I came into AA with just a little bit of willingness, a little bit of open-mindedness, and a little bit of honesty. When I got here, honesty was a big deal for me because I didn't know how to be honest. I'd been lying for so long to so many people that I was afraid to tell the truth and nothing but the truth. But it came slowly. Today, I'm thankful to God for working through you and through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to help me stay sober one day at a time. And today I am happy, joyous, and free. I have had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.